92FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now. Game on, weeknights from 6.
On 2FM.
Thanks to Roz and Emma. It's Monday, the 27th of June, and this is Game On. Coming up today, breaking news out of Mayo this evening as James Horan resigns after yesterday's defeat to Kerry.
You take time to reflect now, James. There's no rash decisions, is there, in that dressing room?
Look, we just had a chat in there, knowing, you know, there's always, at the end of every year, there's always players and members of the management team, whatever, you know. So look, no rash decisions when the emotions are high.
More on that with Keith Higgins very shortly. Plus, we review the rest of the weekend's action with Brendan Devaney and Neil Ewing. Meanwhile, the girls in green are 4-0 up. The second half is just about to get underway in Georgia. Rebecca Cray is in studio to keep us up to date as the goals will hopefully keep going in.
As Ireland build once again with Denise O'Sullivan, and now Katie McCabe with a rocket high into the roof of the net from the edge of the area. It's an absolute thunderbolt from Katie McCabe. The delivery towards Louise Quinn, it got something on it and it's nudged in. Nia Fahey was there. Has she got her first ever international goal? I think she has. The goal stands. It's 2-0 Ireland. And Nia delivered in, and it's a third goal for the Republic of Ireland. And it's Megan Connolly who got the last touch on it. And Ireland have a third goal inside the opening 18 minutes of this match.
In rugby, Bernard Jackman sets us up for the week ahead for Ireland in New Zealand. And in League of Ireland, we're live to St. Pat's ahead of their clash with the Shamrock Rovers. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Now, welcome along. It is going to be a very, very busy show. There is a lot happening. Rebecca Cray is with me in studio. We have been watching the Republic of Ireland women's team against Georgia in that World Cup qualifier. The second half has just got underway and it is going according to script with Ireland leading 4-0. Rebecca, they've been quite impressive, as expected though.
Yeah, most definitely. It's been really ruthless, really relentless. You know, great finish from Katie to kick us off. Thunderbolt of a shot, and thankfully it went in. And then obviously Nia Fahey getting her first after 104 caps, which is phenomenal. But again, we don't know if it was a slight handball, but look, she'll take it. And again, Katie with her fourth goal to send us in 4-0 at half time. So look, yeah, great performance so far. A slight bit of complacency, I thought, creeping in at the end of the first half. You don't want that to happen. You know, want habits to stay good and stay on top of the passing and crossing. But look, all gone to plan so far.
Yeah, for sure. And look, all these games, no matter what, they're important that they get results, performances, keep building momentum, keep building confidence. Vera Powell had suggested before this one that Georgia had improved a little bit of late, but that doesn't seem to be the case. Definitely going on how lax they've been about Katie McCabe.
Yeah, crazy. Like, I'm looking at some of the corners coming in. She's on her own at the edge of the box, you know. I don't know if that was just a kind of a mind game by Vera to say something like that, but it doesn't look like they've improved at all.
Yeah, so look, it is 4-0 now, 47 minutes on the clock. It was 4-0 when these teams last met at halftime as well, and Ireland managed to score 11 goals in that one, so it'll be interesting to see if they do go chasing that goal tally. By the looks of these couple of minutes anyway in this second half, it seems to be the case for sure. Rebecca, thank you. We'll be back to you in a little bit, so keep an eye on that and keep us up to date, and hopefully we'll have a few more scores. We are going to turn our attention to Gaelic Games now. Breaking news just before we came on air. James Horan has stepped down as Mayo manager with immediate effect. So this brings his second spell in charge of the county to an end. Horan, first of all, took over as Mayo manager in October 2010. He led Mayo to back-to-back All-Ireland football finals in 2012 and in 2013. Then in 2014, he resigned as manager, but 4 years later came back in 2018 again. And once more led Mayo back to consecutive All-Ireland football finals in 2020 against Dublin and 2021 against Tyrone. He also won 6 Connacht titles and won Allianz National Football League crown with Mayo. Unfortunately for Mayo and for James Horan, he never managed to get his hands on the Sam Maguire, but has still left a very lasting effect on Mayo, no doubt. Keith Higgins is with us, former player, to talk us through James Horan's career as Mayo manager. Keith, I think it was probably after yesterday and listening to James Horan and seeing James Horan, expected really that he might pull the curtain down on this. But at the same time, it's still a difficult one because there was so much promise, hope and expectation associated with Mayo, as there always seems to be, but definitely with James Horan in charge.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it really came as a surprise to anyone really, you know. I suppose just the way the kind of the, obviously the way yesterday ended, the way the season seems to be going, you know, it just kind of nearly petered out in a way really in the last 10 or 15 minutes than yesterday. So no real surprise, but look, he's, it was over the 8 years he's been there, particularly in his first spell, you know, he's brought Mayo from probably at a fairly low ebb in 2010 up to, you know, been right in contention for majority of the last 10 or 12 years. So look, he's done a huge job there, and you know, he would have had a big connection with a lot of the players there that were with him, especially in the first spell as well. So yeah, it would be tough to see him go, but look, I don't think it's any great surprise.
So what's his legacy?
Like I said there, I think he kind of changed Mayo football really. I think when he came in at the end of 2010, he just kind of changed the whole mindset around, you know, around the team, around the panel, how they operate. You know, put in kind of lots of standards there, you know, kind of real professionalism to the whole thing. And, you know, like I said, I think his original statement when he took the job that he wants to make Mayo consistently competitive, and I think in fairness to him, you know, you can't argue with that statement. You know, I'm not sure what the exact record is for a semi-final and final appearance, but look, we've definitely been, I suppose, in the top four or five teams since pretty every year since he's taken over. So I think he's kind of completely changed the face of Mayo football, really.
Yeah, and in ways it was almost, I guess, bad luck, really, when you think about that Dublin team that Mayo did come up against as well, because arguably the greatest Gaelic football team that we've ever seen, and it was always going to be difficult to try and get Sam Maguire when they were around. But still, at the same time, they, you know, that Mayo team came so agonisingly close.
Yeah, I suppose, look, you could probably argue that we probably came closest, you know, in the 4 years when James wasn't there, but I think he'd laid the foundations 4 years previous to that. But I think at the same time, he'd probably look back and then probably see there was a few missed opportunities there, you know, 2012, 2013, and probably even last year against Tyrone, you know. So while he was, you know, he was the right man for Mayo football when he took over in 2010, you know, there is some missed opportunities there, I'd say. But look, even the last couple of years, I mean, the panel of players were there when he took over at the end of 2018, the panel of players are there now, it's hugely different, and there'll probably be more changes in the next year or two, you know. So you know, he's done a very good job. There's a big transition there with players, like I said. So yeah, look, it's going to be an interesting one now to see who's going to succeed him.
It really will. Is it the right time for James Horan to step away?
I think it probably is, yeah. But like I said at the start there, it just felt like it was probably coming that way. Probably felt like it was the right time. You know, he'd 4 years on Michelin, and then the second 4 years, you know, two of those kind of impacted by COVID, which were probably difficult to deal with and difficult to manage through. So, you know, obviously it wasn't all plain sailing for him, but yeah, I think it probably has to feel the right time to go, unfortunately.
So Keith, who do you think is going to step into his shoes? Which are big ones to fill?
Yeah. And like I said, obviously with the news only breaking there kind of recently, I haven't had a huge amount of time to think about it. Look,
I could start throwing some names at you if you want.
Yeah, look, it's a difficult one. I mean, look, are they going to go outside the county? It's hard to know. You look inside the county here, you're probably Ray Dempsey, who's managed Knockmore to back-to-back county titles. Morris Sheridan was involved in the 21s and the previous Sigerson wins, you know. So outside the county then, I genuinely don't know where they would go outside the county. You know, Jim McGuinness has talked up a lot. I don't think that has happened. You know, obviously people will mention Andy Morrison. He's with Leitrim now, but he's only there a year, so whether he'd lead them, it's hard to see. So, you know, there's lots of questions. It's a very difficult one to answer. So, I don't know, it's going to be a tough one for the county board, but I think it's an important one that they get right, because, you know, bar maybe a handful of that team, it is a very, very young panel, and they need someone good there to guide them through the next couple of years.
And just given the fact that it is a young panel, as you said, you know, the players that are here now, they might not be there in a couple of years' time. So there's still probably a little bit of rebuilding to do. Given, when you take that into account, do you think somebody like Andy Moran, who could maybe take on a project and look at maybe building things over a few years, would be the right person to go in there?
Possibly, I suppose, you know, given the connection that he has with the county, with some of the players that are there. Obviously, he was involved with Mike Sowell in the under-20s there for a couple of years. But I suppose on the other side of it, he's very, very limited inter-county experience at senior level. So, you know, it'll be a very big project for him to take on. Like I said, whether he'd leave Leitrim after 1 year, I don't know. I think he probably feels like there's a big project there for him as well. So, you know, it probably may not be the right time for Andy just yet. But who's to know? Like I said, we probably didn't see him going into the Leitrim job when he took that over as well. So, yeah, that's probably, if they were to approach him, it'd be a big decision for him, like I said, leaving Leitrim after just 1 year.
Yeah, and I think as well there's some players there that might need a little bit of convincing to stay on too, because after yesterday's performance and a crushing defeat, it's really hard to see everybody sticking with it. But, you know, looking at them over the season, there might have been some inconsistency, but there's still a lot of talent and potential there, you'd have to feel.
Absolutely, yeah. Look, I suppose over the next few weeks and months, obviously the talk will probably come down to the likes of maybe Lee, Kevin McLaughlin, maybe even Aidan a bit as well. Like, but, you know, these guys aren't that old, you know. They're about 31, 32 years of age. It's not like they're 35 or 36 or whatever. So they might need a bit of convincing, but I still think there's plenty of life in them. There's still a big role for them to play in a squad next year, whether that's just been around the panel encouraging others to come through. You know, they could definitely do a job at certain stages throughout games. I mean, you just see the form that Lee was in this year. So, look, I think any talk of kind of retirement is probably a small bit premature for a lot of guys. Like, you know, it's probably different to a couple of years ago where there was a few of us kind of, you know, probably in mid-30s, it was probably definitely time to go. But these guys are still a lot to offer. So I wouldn't see huge changes. But like I said, you know, you just hope that whoever comes in could convince them to stay on.
And look, James, you could tell, was really disappointed, and listening to his comments after the game, you could tell that it wasn't just the performance on the pitch that disappointed him. He said things like from no pitches, no training pitches, injuries. It was a raggle-taggle kind of season. Is the setup in general in Mayo good enough, do you think? Or should there be more done to ensure that this inter-county team, this group of players, can perform at the level that they need to?
Yeah, look, there's probably always more that can be done. But I think, You know, you mentioned pitches there. Look, that was kind of an issue for all teams in Mayo over the winter. We had the same thing with the hurlers, difficulty locating training pitches. The pitches in Castlebar were closed for a while, and there was weather, and, you know, getting into clubs can be difficult as well during the middle of winter, and there's no floodlights in a lot of places. Look, that's obviously a bigger issue than something that the manager can control. That's kind of comes down to the county board and what plan they put in place over the next few years. So, you know, that's probably not going to be resolved over the next few months, but you know, the rest of the stuff, injuries, sometimes you can't legislate for that type of stuff when you're trying to prepare a team. You know, it's a bit of luck along the way, and either have it or you don't. So, look, there's always things that managers can control, but a lot of the time there's a lot of stuff outside of it that they can't control either. So, like I said, you know, the performance yesterday, definitely in the second half, you know, there'll obviously be a lot talked about the opportunities they had and the missed shots and all that. So, look, that'd be a big disappointment for them. You know, Kerry were probably off it a bit, so there was a huge opportunity there to try and get over the line. But yeah, like I said, it's just, I say, frustration, disappointment for him at this stage.
He kept his distance from the media quite a bit. What kind of a manager was he?
I love James was very good. You know, he was good with the players. He had, you know, I wouldn't say stubborn probably, but he knew what he wanted to do, and he was very rigid in going about that. He stuck to his plan. He stuck to his guns. But, you know, like I said, he was very good at kind of just putting the structures in place to try and make things easy for the players, try and get the best out of them, you know. I suppose, look, when you're, we've mentioned some of the difficulties that he faced there, but when you're dealing with trying to prepare a team through the last couple of years, like mentioned with COVID and all that, you know, trying to deal with county boards, you have 30, 40 players there, you can't keep them all happy trying to get game time, trying to deal with media as well, you know, it's not the most straightforward thing. So in a way, you can kind of see why he maybe kind of pulled back from the media thing a small bit and just kind of try to keep everything in-house. You know, I sometimes think that here in Mayo that we're a bit nearly obsessed with having to know everything that goes on, but if you don't hear that from other counties around the country, you know, so look, in a way, I'd say probably a bit of frustration as well with everything and all the questions and constant question of what he was doing. So, you know, in a way, that's probably why he did pull back a small bit.
Yeah, it's a full-on job, that's for sure, and I don't think it's something that you can do for extended amounts of time because of those reasons that are outlined there. And in a county like Mayo, with such intensity, quite like Kerry, you know, it can be all consuming and quite draining, I'd say, and you have to pull the plug on it at some stage. But just on yesterday, and like just the way maybe Gaelic football has been played for the last little while, we look at Tyrone last year and what they did, and if you even look at the likes of Derry and Armagh this year, do Mayo need a new style now, do you think?
Possibly. I wouldn't say they need a new style. I think, you know, you kind of always play to your strengths, and I think that's kind of what James had tried to do, given the players that were there, particularly, like I said, in his first stint. And you know, I think as well there, with like when O'Sheen kind of breaking onto the scene and Tommy Conroy and these guys, you know, you kind of play to your strengths, and if your strengths is kind of a fast-paced running game, well, then that's what you go with. Yeah, I think there's always time. You need to be able to vary it. You need to be able to kind of change up a small bit, and you know, nearly kind of a horses for courses style thing, depending on who you're playing. If you need to go defensive and get numbers back, so yeah, look, that's kind of, you know, you'd imagine that's kind of part and parcel. But like I said, that's kind of the one thing with James, when he had his way of doing things, he was very determined to stick with it. And you know, people would say maybe that was his downfall on a few occasions.
Okay, well, Keith, big news for sure coming out of Mayo. But even though you said it was expected, it's still, I think when you read it in black and white or see it and hear it, it's quite, it is quite big news, and needs a bit of time to process, because it means that there's big change coming in Mayo, changing of the guard, and who knows who is going to follow. But thank you so much for joining us, Keith, and no doubt we'll be talking to you again soon.
Cheers, Mary. Thanks for watching.
Thanks. Rebecca Cray is with me in studio. There is 60 minutes on the clock now. The Republic of Ireland losing Georgia 5-0. And from glancing up at the clock, or the screen, Rebecca, it does look like it's still all one-way traffic.
Yeah, been much of the same. I think they just can't control Denise O'Sullivan and Jessu in midfield there. They're just causing havoc at the minute. And the same with Heather Payne and Katie down the side. It looks like there's this few substitutions coming now as well, but Louise Quinn did very well as well for the fifth goal, trademark header at the back post. I think it was coming as well. She got on the end of a few corners, but yeah, great finish. But yeah, I think it's time now, obviously, to bring a few bodies in, get a few minutes on board, and look, hopefully we can push on and get a few more goals in.
Yeah, and even for Jess there, the more that she gets to play on the pitch with Denise, when you think of the big games that are coming up, it's such a huge benefit for her, just from a confidence point of view, to be able to impact a game, albeit against Georgia, but it's still international football and it's always a big step up.
Yeah, most definitely. I think Vera's kind of instilled that confidence in her in the last few games. You know, she's given her those starts, and they're linking up so well, and it's only going to be great for the big games that we have going forward. And I've seen Abby Larkin coming on there as well, so it'll be a fantastic experience for her to get on, and look, she might nick her first goal.
Yeah, Amber Barrett making way for Abby to come on there, and when you look at the players leading the lines, and maybe even the players that have scored now, they're not our strikers. It seems to be, it's quite similar to the men's team. It's an area where we don't have a lot of options. Abby there now, it'll be interesting to see how she gets on, but it seems like we need somebody to step into the fold. We need that regular, consistent goal scorer.
Yeah, just an out and out nine, you know, just those scrappy goals, 6 yards box, 8 yards out, whatever it may be. I know, looking at it, the start of the week or the start of the camp when we seen Steph Roach called in, I thought that might be something that Vera's trying to, you know, explore, give her a bit of time, see how she gets on. She's been doing well in the Women's National League. Doesn't seem to be the case tonight, unfortunately. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see. Look, hopefully Abby coming in now can make her mark, give Vera some questions going forward. But yeah, it's definitely an area we need to find someone that can be Olivia O'Toole-esque.
Good comparison there. Right, we're going to take a very quick break. So 62 minutes gone, Republic of Ireland leading Georgia 5-0, and hopefully still lots more good stuff to come.
RTE
2FM.
On
2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On. Lots to get through today. James Horan has stepped down as Mayo manager. We just spoke to Keith Higgins about that, and we'll be speaking to Brendan Devaney and Neil Ewing also in just a minute. The Republic of Ireland are in action against Georgia, and it is currently 5-0 to Ireland with just over an hour played. We will be also speaking to Rebecca Cray about how Ireland are getting on in just a few minutes. But first of all, we're going to get stuck into the Gaelic football with Neil Ewing and Brendan Devenny. Neil, to you first. I was expecting us to be starting talking about the action in Croke Park and the fallout from that brawl between the Armagh and Galway players. But James Horan has now turned the news cycle on its head by announcing his retirement. How much of a loss is he going to be to Mayo, do you think? Or is it a case that now is the right time for him to step away and let someone else try and lead this team forward?
Yeah, Marie, to be honest, I think he's going to be a huge loss. You know, I think it's actually underrated what he's done for Mayo football since he got involved in the winter of 2010. You know, they were probably not in the best place that Mayo had been for a long number of years before that, and he came in, and you know what I really noticed was he just changed the environment around Mayo football. He took a lot of the nonsense out of it, you know, a real culture change. He got some top class people involved with him, you know, over the years, Keane O'Neill, Ed Coughlin, Kieran Shannon, you know, James Burke from Ardenry, you know, a highly rated, very young coach. Kieran McDonald has come in, but you know, there was a lot of stuff at Mayo kind of up to that point where they were relying on personalities and, you know, exceptional performances from players. But, you know, he took all that out of it and, you know, really transformed the culture. And you would have known from playing with some of those Mayo players, Sigurdsson football, and against some of those Mayo players, just it was nearly like a personality change in them guys and how they approached their football. And you could really see, you know, from 2011 onwards, you know, they were nearly a guarantee for the last four and probably would have won at least one of Ireland, if not more, only for running into a generational team in the shape of Dublin.
Yeah, for sure. Look, we'll get into that when we're talking about Mayo and Kerry in a few moments. Brendan Devenny is with us on the line as well. Brendan, we might as well get back to the major talking point from the weekend. Armagh Galway, look, it was a fantastic game. It was overshadowed by the brawl. There is no getting away from that. Disappointing to see that, I think, at the end of the game when we should have been talking about what brilliant football there was. But it does seem like there's still those brawls, those kind of coming togethers are still such a big part of Gaelic football. And it's hard to get away from seeing a time where that we're not going to see that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's not the big talking point. I enjoyed the game. See that stuff. Mostly it's crap, to be honest. Sure, it doesn't look good. You have a situation in the middle where somebody's face was grabbed, and we're obviously not going to go into that now in too much detail, and there was a box maybe thrown. But really, most of it was grabbing and wrestling. It looks bad, but I think to overshadow the game, I don't think that, to be honest. I mean, I think this is one of the games that kind of saved the championship for me. You know, looking at it going into these last series of games, there's probably four teams out there you didn't expect to be here. Maybe you would have made a case for Galway. But outside of Kerry, Mayo and Dublin, the usual teams here, we had these new teams in, and four of them were playing each other. And of course, this was the one game we thought might catch fire. And it did brilliantly. I know it boiled over at that point, but I thought it was absolutely a fantastic game of football. And what a shame that it's not replayed this week. I mean, I just can't get my head around penalties and why. I mean, two games, I think, about the penalties this year. What is the need after extra time to even do that? Why do they need to be finished on the day? You know, it's so uncommon for a game to go that far. There's weeks leading into this game where this game could be replayed. It would be a sellout next week. All the hype would be around it, and even that bit of controversy would be thrown in the mix and the players suspended. It would be a fascinating encounter, and we need these games. So I think it's such a shame that we're not having that, but I think that the team deserved to win it. Funnily enough, did go through, and I thought it was a very smart move by Joyce in the last couple of friendlies to play penalties. He had to use penalties in the last couple of friendlies, because even at training, Emery, hitting penalties is messing about, but even in a friendly type situation where both teams are standing and you have to do the walk-up and all that there counts in terms of the pressure building on the game. So I thought that was very poignant to hear that after, and it certainly worked, because Galway took those penalties like seasoned pros at soccer. I'm sure if any English fans were watching, they'd be dreaming of guys hitting the penalties like that.
Yeah, well, you're after getting through a lot there now, Brendan, I have to say, in those couple of minutes. And there's a few things that I agree with you on and a few that I disagree with you. I do think that what happened at the end of the game was a talking point. I, you know, people were no matter where you went over the last 24 hours, it's what people have pointed out about the game. Like, obviously it was a brilliant game of football as well, and we all enjoyed it, but it was still something that people didn't want to see, and it's an unnecessary part of the game as well, I think. I mean, I understand it's the physicality there, tempers are going to flare, but there isn't a need for that to happen. And then as for the penalties, everybody knew the rules beforehand. They knew that it was going to happen. If you think it's unfair, that's completely your opinion. But there are other games to come. There is a season there. We can't just push things out when we decide that it suits us. Clearly, Pádraig Joyce decided that he was going to practice these skills of the game, which they knew where they were coming, and it worked out in his favour that he did. And they are skills of the game. There are rules that are there. And whether we like it or not, we knew that they were going to come if the game finished in a draw.
Yeah, I get you, Marie. Now, the last day I was on, remember, we ended up talking about my brilliant soccer career. I mean, no time to talk about the Gaelics. I'm sorry if I unloaded too much on you. Marie, just a thing on penalties. The thing on the penalties, Marie, no G-man likes them. I haven't met a G-man yet that says, yeah, that's fair enough. No, let's be honest, Marie, nobody strikes the ball from the ground in our game except for a penalty taker. You know, the keeper obviously is a net, so he's the only other person. Now, your penalty taker is the only person who will be routinely doing that. So they decide a game on a skill that we don't do is a bit silly. Now, I know it's in the game because there has to be some forfeit for pulling the guy down near the goals. I get that, Lee, and I don't think that's a change. But surely kicks from the hands is what these do. I mean, that's in Super Campbell, they step up and him in one leg nearly. They had a penalty, which he skies over the bar. Now, get him, they had a shot from 40 yards out from goal. Let that be at least the thing that saves it. To be honest with you, I think... I'm sorry it didn't go to a replay, but I think the penalties need to be changed. I don't think it's the way they decided.
Yeah, and that again just comes down to rules and up to people to decide to change those rules, because they are there and you can plan for them. And I know that people don't like taking them and it's not a skill of the game, but it is the way that games are decided. And like Jurgen Klopp said this season as well, like, they knew that they'd be coming and they got a certain psychologist in to work with the players so that they were able to take them, because they knew that at some stage they might have to take them, and that's clearly what Joyce did as well. And if it comes to a point where we're going to be seeing more of them, which it seems like we are, just given the fact that we have seen games decided this season already by penalties, then it's up to different county boards and members of the GAA to go to their congress, to go to their representatives and decide that they want to change them, because that's the only way to do it. Neil, what do you reckon?
Yeah, Marie, probably just on the penalties. I kind of agree with Brendan in that I would have liked to see a replay next to the end. You know, I think even if it means a team playing three weekends in a row, I think a replay would have been a great occasion next to the end. You know, great opportunity for both sets of players to go out, start from scratch and have a real good go at it. The players would have enjoyed it. You know, all the supporters would have enjoyed it. And so be it if the players or teams ended up playing 3 weeks in a row. Like, you know, it's only one game every 7 days, and I think we overstate that. Then, on further on the penalties, I just wonder why there wasn't the same outcry about penalties when Clare were beaten in the championship, you know, when Leitrim were knocked out of their championship in a penalty shootout. You know, it just, as you say, we all knew the rules, and so be it. That, going into the game yesterday, that was going to be the way the game was decided, if it was level after extra time. Just on what happened, you know, after full time in normal time, you know, I think there was one very obvious incident, and that's going to be dealt with by the GAA. You know, that's out of the way. But, you know, to be honest with you, Marie, I was highly embarrassed, and I was really, really annoyed watching what happened before that. And it's not just in that game. I think it's in so many games, you know, inter-county games, club games across the country, and it's this culture of kind of machoism and this messing of grabbing guys around the neck and pulling them down to the ground, and, you know, guys coming in and trying to pull them off. And, you know, it's highly, highly embarrassing as somebody who's associated with the GAA. And you can see why people who want to look down their noses at the GAA or want to criticise the GAA, you know, rightly get on their high horse and laugh at that. You know, it's something that we really, really need to have a look at. You know, to be honest, I heard people saying there's two dressing rooms, you know, in the opposite stands at Croke Park, and they should do that to prevent it. You know, to me, that's ridiculous. Like, lads need to act like adults, like human beings, and be able to go down the tunnel together after a game. Like, you know, it happens in so many other sports. You know, you see boxers, they go in and they literally punch the head of each other for a few rounds, and, you know, they can embrace after it. And, you know, it's just this thing in the GA where you can't be seen to back down, or, you know, you're not manly, or you let them bully you if you don't, like, you know, start pushing and pulling and grabbing a jersey. You know, it's not even fighting. It's completely cowardly. And, you know, it's just looking to provoke a reaction from somebody else. And, you know, it just has to stop. And I think inter-county games set the example for youngsters and for club players across the country. And, you know, now is a time where we have to say that's not acceptable in our game and cut it out. Like, and, you know, the GPA do so much good work. The GAA do so much good work. You know, is there a stand that the GAA and the GPA can take on this? And, you know, start to reward the guys that don't get involved in it. And, you know, promote the culture that it's not acceptable. Because, you know, a serious incident might happen from not from this pulling and dragging, but from what it might lead to and how it might antagonise somebody. And, you know, then, you know, we'll all look at it, look back and regret and say, you know, we should have done differently. How do we allow that, you know? The change needs to start now. Like, and, you know, maybe there's a role there for the GAA and the GPA to work together so that inter-county teams and players can be the role models that kickstart the change.
It's funny because I was watching the game yesterday, and usually on a Monday, Ruby is on with me, and all I could think of was, I'm so embarrassed now about this because I'm going to have to go on Monday. And I know that Ruby, who isn't necessarily from a J background, he's horse racing, and obviously it's a very different sport. But I knew that he was just going to be saying to me, what were they doing? Like, why were they doing that? And, you know, like you guys as well, and like most people involved in Gaelic games, you've got so much pride. You take so much pride in your sport and what it means to you, and, you know, what it has given me and what it has given you guys, and, you know, just the community that it has provided us with and the opportunities. And I just felt a little bit like I was going to have to come on here now. He's just not here today. He's probably listening. I'm sure he'll text me in a minute and start slagging me anyway, and be embarrassed by those actions, because it is the sport that I'm associated with and that means so much to me. And a bit like you, Neil, I was just completely embarrassed by the situation and felt that it was unnecessary. And, like, I'm not worried that, you know, kids are going to go out and, you know, play a football match today and start doing the same thing. Like, I wouldn't be hysterical about it, but I just find that there is no need for it. Like, Brendan, you obviously played the game. I haven't played in an environment like that, so I can't say that I wouldn't partake in something like that. But is it just really hard to not get involved, Brendan?
I think what Neil's saying, it's not about taking it. You can't take a backward step. Listen, we can't let Armagh off the hook here in terms of the third kind of situation where they're involved with something like this year. So there's definitely something at play there. And listen, I don't want to be blaming anybody, but listen, three times in a row, come on. Now, the time against Donegal, I was at the league game. I was at the game, actually, as well, in Armagh with the Tyrone one earlier in the season. Listen, most of them is grappling and it's messing. And the thing about Neil saying there about the other sports looking at us, or us trying to have to defend us, I don't think we have to defend anything about the GAA. These people have an issue with the GAA, always going to have an issue with the GAA. And it's the same people whinge and cry on. And you mentioned Ruby there. Listen, horse racing, let's look at any sport around there. Is any sport perfect? No, it's not. What should happen here is the authorities need to come down properly on these guys. And there's guys who are going to miss a semi-final. Now, that's the biggest thing. I can't get my head around, guys, this was the biggest game probably a lot of these guys have played in their career. They were at jeopardy of missing an All-Ireland semi-final and potentially, you know, missing their place and losing out the potential final. I mean, it was absolutely crazy for me on all those levels. But listen, if we don't have action, if we don't have players manning up to each other, the game will be bloody sterile. It'll be like an old crap
soccer match. Yeah, but Brendan, that needs to happen during the 70 minutes and, you know, through the ball. Like, I agree with you, and, you know, I think we've probably, you know, taken too much aggression out of the game itself, you know, in terms of how guys can tackle. You know, I know it's very difficult for referees and it's very hard to be black and white on that. You know, we probably have, you know, taken some of that physical contact out of the game that players and supporters really enjoyed. But when the whistle blows, like, just a little bit of cop on. And, you know, respect for a fellow human being needs to kick in as well. You know, there's just no common sense in that.
Yeah, but, Neil, there's quite a few factors at work here in terms of that's your teammate. So if I'm training with you all year and I'm backing you to help, if I see you getting grabbed, it's a natural reaction of the team now. I'm not defending or condoning it in any way.
No,
I'm
lads are going to... There's an element of human nature there. But, like, why are we allowing the first incident to happen?
There used to be a thing, Neil, where I understand. And actually, there were some bad tackles and old crap that go in that game, which I agree with you, Neil, which maybe festered and led to this. The officials weren't on some of the nasty tackles, late tackles that were going on. So that's probably building up, didn't it? And that hasn't been put on, that hasn't been put in the mix in this at all, that the referees, the officials were to blame for not getting a proper handle in this game. So listen, I agree with you on that there. I just think that, you know, this needs to be dealt with and lads need to pay the price of what's happening, not be let off like they were when it was challenged after the Marie and Letterkenny that time. That's probably what led to this as well. So listen, there's a bigger case at play here, but I'd be much more interested in sorting out the rules of our game before this. You know, as Charlie Tag can earlier, the rules of a rule in play now where there has to be four players or two or forward players in a certain zone of the pitch at any one time when you give up a free kick. I mean, we're almost at that point with a lot of these games, and particularly the club. That's a much bigger issue than this, a bit of a melee for me at the weekend.
Okay, well, we started the conversation by saying it's not that big of a talking point, and we spent most of it talking about it. So let's move on from that now, because there was a lot of action, and I think we've learned a lot after the weekend as well about the semi-finalists and what is to come. So look, we know that Galway themselves, I'd say, will have learned a huge amount about from their game against Armagh, and also their opponents. Derry will as well. But just let's very quickly have a look at Derry, Brendan, or we'll go to you, Neil, Derry and Clare. So you would think that after watching Derry against Clare, that there aren't a lot of people that would like to be playing Derry in this semi-final.
No, definitely not. I think, you know, Clare are definitely going to be disappointed with themselves. You know, a lot of individuals probably underperformed. They'd be disappointed with some silly mistakes for the goals. But, you know, overall, a year of progress for Clare again. But, yeah, I think they're just so, so impressive. You know, I've been impressed with them all year, really. You know, you can really see Rory Gallagher has been building something. A lot of lazy stereotypes out there about them being defensive. You know, it's just not true. You know, when they attack, they're probably the most exhilarating team in the country to watch. You know, when they really go for it, you've seen some of those goals they scored. Even and some of the scores they get, there's nearly guys lining up at the end of these moves to be the finisher. And so, you know, I just hope they've put that to bed. And you know, they're going into the semi-final now with huge momentum. And I think even what was interesting the last day was somebody, I suppose, the newer guys that stood up. You know, Conor McCluskey, a cornerback, you know, I thought he was absolutely outstanding the last day. So, you know, there's guys really growing in confidence. The likes of Christian McCaig, Brendan Rodgers, you know, McGuigan, they'll get a lot of the headlines. You know, they have a lot of experience. But and you can see, you know, Benny Hearn, Conor McCluskey, you know, guys really, really growing into themselves and starting to believe in themselves as top-class inter-county footballers. And I just think the momentum they have now, that they're going to be very hard to stop in a semi-final.
Yeah, and I'd say if anybody was really enjoying the scenes in the Armagh-Galway game, it was probably Rory Gallagher as well, just seeing how much it was taking out of everybody. Brendan, Dublin and Cork didn't really set the world on fire, and the big talking point seems to be that there was no Conor Callaghan, no James McCarthy, and you could feel it.
Yeah, certainly. It's we've been a good nothing to see here with a couple of games at the weekend, you know, after of course the fireworks of our man Galway. Yeah, it was one of those performances. Listen, Cork, well, they hit 11 against Dublin, they hit 10 or 11 against Kerry, 10 against Dublin. You know, they're just not going to have enough possession, they're not going to have enough presence to really hamper a big team. I mean, Rock hit half his goals, Fenton half kicking in with 3 points as well. They were just physically not ready, and just Neil's mentioned Derry there, the physical conditioning of those top teams, and you can see teams stay in teams for a while, and then it's not only that the game opens up, but the actual power that the bigger sides have, the bench that they have, it's just one of those things where they just can't be contained no matter how long you do it, and particularly at Croke Park. So again, probably a nice enough game for Desi with a couple of players to just go through and do what they need to do, and look towards this mouth-watering semi-final. You know, again, this is one of the games we're looking forward to. There hasn't been that many brilliant games this season, but I think Armagh and Galway were certainly one, and we're really looking for this Dublin-Kerry to be a massive game as well.
Yeah, it really will. So let's have a quick look as well, Neil, at Mayo and Kerry. We know now that James Horan has stepped away. Huge disappointment. I can only imagine how much really for the Mayo camp, because you felt like, well, I felt anyway, like the opportunity was there for them, but they just didn't seem to be able to take it. But that left Jack O'Connor and Kerry. Now moving on to a semi-final, albeit Jack O'Connor, he was far from pleased really after the game, and you can see why.
Yeah, outwardly, far from pleased. I think inwardly, he might have been maybe one of the happiest men leaving Croke Park at that time yesterday, and then he was assuming the Galway crowd had left long before the Kerry team were leaving. You know, a lot of talk about Kerry being untested. You know, they got through yesterday, and I know Mayo had a lot of chances, but it just felt like Kerry always had another gear. But Kerry also, you know, made a lot of mistakes, and you know that was what Jack O'Connor probably wants now going into this 2 weeks of training. You know, it's brought guys really back down to earth, showing them where there's a few gaps that they need to work on. And at the same time, they were relatively comfortable, I think, despite the Mayo away. So, you know, I think kind of a boring win for them. A big thing, I think, for them looking towards the Dublin game is going to be kickouts. Their own kickouts and opposition kickouts. They're just not where they need to be on both of them to win an All-Ireland or to even get past Dublin, to be honest. But, yeah, you know, a few other positives as well. Then I think, you know, Paul Geaney was immense yesterday. Tom O'Sullivan... You know, they even showed that, obviously, David Clifford, there's been a bit of talk about his injury the last number of weeks, probably picked up a different injury yesterday. So you can imagine injuries in David Clifford are going to be a lot of talk coming into the Dublin game. But I think enough guys showed yesterday that they're there. They could probably even beat Dublin without David Clifford. Obviously, they're going to want him on the pitch, but they do have the firepower to even do that, which, you know, no other team in the country could say. And I thought David Moran was immense yesterday as well at midfield. And probably strange timing heading into the Dublin game in that, you know, traditionally Jack Barry would have matched up against Brian Fenton, and now there's going to be a little bit of dilemma for the Kerry management team based on yesterday. You know, do they stick with David Moran after that performance he gave yesterday? Do they hold David Moran back like they did against Cork to try and come on for 15-20 minutes and have a huge impact to see out the game? So that's just an interesting question mark yesterday would have thrown up for them. And I think maybe just the one other thing for Kerry, huge positive in their not conceding the goals that they probably were last year, but they're just not scoring goals as easily. I know Clifford's goal was top class yesterday, but you know, Paul Geaney had a chance, he'd be disappointed not to score that, but probably just not creating the quality of chance that they would have in previous years. So you know, probably ideal for Jack O'Connor, a win and loads to build on looking towards the Dublin game in 2 weeks.
Yeah, the only thing is it was such a lack of intensity. They really have to step it up when they head into that cauldron against Dublin, somewhere that they're so comfortable with in Croke Park. Brendan, for you, out of the four teams that we have now seen progress to the semi-finals, who for you would you put as a front runner?
That's it. Do you know what? We see after this weekend, it's so difficult. You know, we hadn't seen top class performances from Kerry and Dublin. And I agree with Neil, they're probably happy enough because they've got stuff to work on. There was a few things in each game that they think might be going to improve, particularly on Kerry. I agree with Neil there. So it's so hard to say now because all of a sudden Derry's play has really got people up and noticed. And I think the sheer leaders that they have around the pitch, you know, you talk about Glass, McCaig, Rogers, you know, all their absolutely unbelievable talent all over the pitch, McGuigan, these guys, they just have like, it's like they've captured every line. You know, outside the goalkeeper, I think they're coming close to like a side that anybody would fear, and I think that's your conditioning is going to match them up to any of those teams. So, listen, if they can get over Galway, I think they have a better defence than Galway have, and I think they have man markers that can snuff out, you know, Comer, and if Rogers goes on the better players, Vicky has gone out of my fucking head there. But if I think Derry's defenders one on one can pick up the Galway defenders, Galway forward line better, and I think that's probably where that game will pivot. Like on the other game, it's going to be fire. Just you want to go and see that passion from Dublin and Kerry that we haven't seen so far. Shane McGuigan, of course, I was thinking about me Derry there. And listen, that's where I think those two games will lie. I still think that Kerry will come through Dublin and Derry will come through Galway.
Okay, right. Well, I'm looking forward to chatting about them over the next few weeks. Brendan and Neil, if there's brawls now in the hurling at the weekend, I'll get you back on Monday and we can talk about that them as well, all right?
I feel bad talking about the brawls because that's Galway Armagh game. The football was absolutely outstanding as well.
Yeah. It really was, but it's important as well, I think, to talk about the other aspects of it as well, because unfortunately they're not one-off incidents and they are a part of the game. And as I said at the start, I just feel it's all a little bit unnecessary. Brendan and Neil, thank you so much for joining us. We will chat to you over the next few weeks with two brilliant semi-finals to look forward to. Rebecca Cray is still with me in studio watching the Republic of Ireland and Georgia. A goal fest, Rebecca.
Yeah, you could say that. It's been no let up in the second half at all. The three subs that came in just gave them a new lease of life, just added to the game. Obviously, Louise got out her second of the game, another header. And then obviously Katie got the hat trick, which I'm sure she was itching for, looking at her on the pitch, was taking shots from everywhere. And yeah, Abby Larkin with her first international goal at 17. Absolutely fantastic finish as well. It was a little Shells link up with Jess Sue assisting her. But yeah, again, much of the same. Like Denise is just pulling the strings in there, Katie as well. And Lily Ag has been quite lively since coming on, so yeah, it's looking good. I think we might see this one out.
That's brilliant, isn't it, to see Abby Larkin score a goal at the beginning of her career, and then Aoife Haghi with 104 Ireland caps getting her first goal as well. Okay, well, this game is nearly over. We will pick up with you again when that final whistle blows, Rebecca. Yep. We're going to take a very quick break now though, and then Bernard Jackman is with us to talk rugby.
RTE
2FM on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On. There is a lot happening. Bit of reaction to our discussion with Brendan Devaney and Neil Ewing on the brawls in the Gaelic football over the weekend. I don't like penalties, but the excitement of extra time is worth it, much better than a replay when a game has to be won on the day. It creates a much better atmosphere, says Ross, who is in favour of penalties, while Brendan Devaney said that they should not be in the game. Lots of people having different views on that. Now it is time to turn our attention to rugby. Bernard Jackman joins us on the line. So the big news overnight is that Joe Smith has joined the New Zealand coaching team after the coaches there got struck down with COVID. And if there wasn't already enough layers to this meeting between these meetings between Ireland and the All Blacks, this certainly gives us another one. Bernard Jackman joins us now on the line. Bernard, no doubt an opportunity that Joe will be relishing.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Obviously, he was due to become a selector after the Lions, or after the Irish tour. I think the Irish journalists were told there's going to be no interviews with Joe because he actually wasn't in role. He's taking over as selector from Grant Fox. But obviously, with Ian Foster and Scott McLeod coming down with COVID, he's been drafted in. So he's going to be on the pitch for the whistle. I think, look, I would have been shocked if he hadn't had an influence on their game, particularly, his knowledge of the Irish players, how to beat them. But now he's actually going to be coaching this week, so it's going to be fascinating. And yeah, I'm sure. Look, he's got a lot of good friends in that Irish setup, but his knowledge of Ireland and how he sets up the All Blacks to play Ireland is going to be fascinating.
Yeah, it really will, and we'll be building up to that throughout the week with that test on 2FM on Saturday morning. Already as well, Bernard, we're starting to see some changes to the squad as expected. We spoke in the run-up to the team departing about how heavy it was going to be down there just in terms of preparation and, of course, the games themselves. But it looks like that Ian Henderson and Rob Herring are going to be out. We don't know how long for yet. They are going to need to go for scans after picking up knocks at training ahead of that game on Wednesday. So Niall Scannell has now been added to the squad to provide cover at hooker. And when it's players like Henderson and Herring starting to drop, it's always a bit of a worry, Bernard.
Yeah, it's interesting. The plan originally was to bring 42 players and then they dropped it to 40, and it sounds like a lot of players, but given the fact that they play Wednesday, Saturday, and then the following Saturday, I think that they probably could have done with an extra specialist hooker and extra specialist scrum half. So, Scanlon is flying out now. Test match, or the Mary game is on Wednesday, so it's going to be difficult for him to sub in that game. And then if he doesn't make it, obviously one of the players that are going to play on Saturday has to double up. So, it's unfortunate to get injuries before the first test, but it has been an incredibly long season, 11 months. So there's a lot of battered and bruised bodies, Jamal Henderson in particular, would pull through. It looked like he was going to start. I think Harry said a big season for Ulster. He's probably going to be on the bench behind Sheehan, but hopefully neither injury are too serious. But yeah, it could be the end of the fifth game. You know, there could be a lot of bodies who need physio or hopefully no operations.
Yeah, and that's before we even start talking about COVID, with Mac Hansen testing positive for it and missing out. Bernard, thank you so much for joining us. We will be building up to Wednesday's game and Saturday's game for the rest of the week, so do please stay tuned to Game On. It's now time to cross over to John Kenny as Shamrock Rovers and St. Pat's meet tonight in the SSC Electricity League. John Kenny, any team news for us?
Yeah, one or two bits of team news. St. Pat's drew 2-2 against Finn Harps after leading 2-0 on Friday. So the injured Sam Curtis goes out. Jack Scott comes into the side. They've also welcomed back Billy King into a striker's position. He will be leading off the striker, I should say, Owen Doyle. So that's a good return from St. Pat's point of view. Very disappointed to have conceded those two late goals against Finn Harps. Shamrock Rovers, well, just the one change for them. Chris McCann comes in for Sean Kavanagh from the 1-0 victory against Bohemians. Was talked that perhaps that Jack Byrne might be fit enough to play, but with European games coming up against Hibs of Malta, he's not being risked tonight. They do have plenty of cover, even though he's one of the most influential players in the league. Tonight, if Shamrock Rovers win, they can go 10 points clear of Dundalk. St. Pat's haven't won, only won once in the last 10 league meetings between the sides, and that was a 1-0 victory here in March with Chris Forrester getting the winning goal. They would be happy to close the gap between themselves and Shamrock Rovers with a win tonight, but that's 14 points at this stage after 21 games. Rovers City certainly sitting very pretty at the top of the league. Kick off here in Inchicore at 7:45. Marie.
Thank you so much, John Kenny. So the Republic of Ireland women's team have beaten Georgia 9-0, and this win moves them into second place in Group A, a point ahead of Finland. The goal difference moves to plus 20 compared to Finland's plus 8, with the Finns and Slovakia providing the opposition in Ireland's final two games in the September doubleheader. Rebecca Cray is with me. Rebecca, it's job done now, moving on to the two crucial games.
Yeah, most definitely. It's been a really clinical and relentless performance, but all eyes will now turn to September. Yeah, most definitely.
And what has Vera Powell learned about her team, do you reckon?
I'd say that, you know, she could just instill a bit of confidence in the players that she has at hand. She has got a good bit of depth now, I think, in the mm-hmm. bench. You've seen that with the three subs coming on, there wasn't much of a change. You know, they stepped up, if anything. So, yeah, look, it's a bit of a headache, I'd say, for her. Abby obviously getting that goal there as well shows that she can score. You know, obviously there is a kind of question marks around that position, that number 9 position. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a few players that aren't in the recent squads, like Leanne Kern and stuff. But yeah, look, it's positive, really exciting. And look, hopefully the last two games are going in their favour too.
Absolutely, Rebecca. Hey, thank you so much for coming into studio. We got through a lot today, and we will be no doubt reflecting on a lot of what we were talking about in the show tomorrow when we are back from 6 o'clock. Tarek Kumar is up next.
RTE 2FM. Game On. On 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.